Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. The recent government shutdown magnified a sobering reality in our society. Adults and children are going hungry. A quick snapshot shows that 1.4 million Ohioans rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, better known as SNAP, formerly food stamps. Franklin County has the second highest number of SNAP recipients after Cuyahoga County. There are SNAP recipients living in all 88 counties in the state. Joining us now to give us an update on SNAP benefits is Matthew Damschroeder, Director of the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. Welcome to All Sides, Director Damschroeder.
Good morning.
So the federal government has been back in business for about a week now. Can you give us a sense of the impact the federal shutdown and had on the SNAP program here in Ohio?
Yeah. So I would say the first impact was that the initial direction from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that oversees the SNAP program as a federally designed, federally funded program, was that because of the federal shutdown that there would not be SNAP benefits in November. That guidance changed a couple of times, and states were able to release partial payments following the USDA guidance, and now that the Congress has enacted a partial budget for the federal government, including a full budget for USDA, we're able then for the rest of November to true all that up and make sure that 100% benefits are out the door.
And where are you in getting toward from partial to 100%? Does everyone have 100% on their card yet?
Almost everyone. The next big batch went to our EBT, Electronic Benefits Transfer Card vendor today. Because of the nature of systems, sometimes there's some that will require a manual activity on our part. So by the end of this week at the latest, everyone will have 100% of their benefits for the month of November.
And when you were able to release those partial benefits in that weird week between when SNAP was done and before the shutdown ended, was that any Ohio money, or did like Ohio spend any money for that partial part?
Great question. So because SNAP is a fully funded, fully federally funded program, we rely 100% right now on the federal government to pay those benefits. And so for us, with the partial benefits, we had to wait until the federal government gave us instructions on how much they were able to use from what's called a contingency fund that exists at USDA to pay those partial benefits. And then once Congress enacted the budget, and we were able to do additional funds. What the state did do in response to the shutdown, understanding for a period of time there that it would appear that no benefits would be paid, Governor DeWine was, of course, very concerned about that. And so Governor DeWine instructed the Department of Job and Family Services to allocate about $7 million to Ohio's regional food banks to provide some resources out locally so that folks would have access to food in that time period where we didn't know for sure what was happening.
Okay. So if it would have come to it, though, would Ohio have paid the SNAP benefits? Do you know, or is that too much of a what if?
Yeah, it's an important question, and I think a lot of people are asking that question going forward, because certainly, you know, this is the longest federal government shutdown we've ever had. It's the first time that the federal funding for SNAP benefits was jeopardized. And so I think states are asking those kinds of questions of, you know, what if, what would happen in the future? There's not a state allocation to ODJFS that's just kind of sitting available for that kind of thing. And it is a lot of money. It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars a month that goes to Ohioans for SNAP every month. And so those kind of state dollars just aren't sitting around for that kind of circumstance. So it is something that I think states will begin to think about in the future if this happens again.
Yeah. And earlier you said it's a fully federally funded program for now. You added that for now, because there is that it has been said that the Trump administration wants to cut back on the federal part of SNAP and have the states pay a portion. Are you already talking about that? Was this like weird week in the government shutdown, kind of like it gave you a little taste of that?
Yeah, no, it definitely, you know, it definitely, there have definitely been a lot of changes to SNAP over the last number of months. So earlier this summer, when Congress passed H.R. 1, it made a number of changes to SNAP that will happen in the future. One of those is to require the states to share a percentage of the SNAP benefits based on that state's administrative error rate. So basically overpayments and underpayments that are a result of caseworker error or client error. That's information that the federal government collects. And so going forward, beginning in October of 2027, they kind of gave a two-year ramp up to that. Beginning in 2027, states will have to share in the benefits depending on their error rate. So for an error rate of 10%, that would be about $320 million for Ohio. So it's something that we're focused on, is bringing down that administrative error rate.
Yeah, well, I guess you have a couple of years to deal with it, but do you know the error rate right now?
For the last federal fiscal year, we were about 9.2%. And so it was, we're looking at getting it down. If we can get it down to less than 6%, there would be no state share benefits. But it's one of those things that error rate is something that's calculated every year. And so it will be a focus of the state and our 88 county partners to make sure we're focused on that to reduce this potential state impact fiscally of a state share of benefits for SNAP.
Why do errors happen? What's an error, I guess?
Yeah, great. That's a really great question. So errors are kind of in two main categories. One is caseworker errors, essentially not asking all of the eligibility questions or miscalculating the benefits that a person is to receive. And then on the client side, there could be an error such as, you know, not updating us when a work situation changes that would impact eligibility, the size of their household, those kinds of things. And so there's basically an audit that we conduct to review those types of things. Some of the most common caseworker errors are simple things, again, like miscalculation, or not asking all the eligibility questions. It's important for your listeners to understand that when we talk about these kind of administrative error rates, this is not an indication of fraud. And almost all of the errors that are created, whether an overpayment or an underpayment, are able to be rectified either by, in the case of an underpayment, you know, paying the individual what they are truly eligible for, or in the case of an overpayment, in a future month's benefit, reducing that benefit in order to recoup the funds back to the government. So, you know, it's not an indication of fraud. It's an indication of kind of administrative efficiency, if you will. And so we want to make sure, A, we're as efficient as possible in Ohio, just because it's the right thing to do, but also now because state dollars will be on the line as a share of the benefits going forward.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about SNAP benefits in Ohio post-government shutdown with Matthew Damschroeder, director of the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. What were some of the challenges for your department? I mean, this whole idea of the government shutdown and knowing that SNAP was going to go away, it going away for a little bit, all of the confusion. Tell me about how that impacted Ohio Department of Job and Family Services.
Well, I would say the impact to us was significant, but I would say the impact to individuals who depend on SNAP to help make their grocery bills every month meet and feed their families was even more significant. And so I would say that the uncertainty that we experienced administratively of kind of going from, you know, changes in instructions at the federal level, interventions by courts and those kinds of things was nothing compared to the uncertainty that SNAP recipients certainly experienced during that time. I'm really proud of the state team. I think we did a really good job responding as soon as we had clear guidance, and even sometimes when we didn't have clear guidance, kind of making some anticipatory decisions. But the state team did a great job working through a couple different weekends, long hours, in order to get those partial payments processed as quickly as possible. And then now, again, working through last weekend to get those balances paid has been a real great effort on the part of the state team.
And you said that you hope that all benefits will be paid for November by the end of this week. So that's a good sign because that's before Thanksgiving, right? Is that?
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. But what's December going to look like? Normal?
Yeah, so December should be normal. So something that happened as a part of our response to the shutdown and getting benefits out as quickly as possible, we ended up doing kind of lump sum payments. Usually benefits are spread out across the month so that, you might have two neighbors who are both on SNAP. One might get their benefits on the 5th of the month. The other might get their benefits on the 15th of the month. And so once we kind of get back to normal for December, some of those things that went away for November as we were trying to expedite those partial payments will kind of be back to normal. So folks who are on SNAP can expect for December 100% of their eligible benefits to be paid on their regular schedule.
Mm-hmm. What are the qualifications for receiving SNAP benefits? Is it just based on income level, or are there other things taken into account?
SNAP eligibility is primarily around income level. And so traditionally, it's about 130% of federal poverty. Governor DeWine, about 2 years ago, to address concerns around SNAP benefit cliffs, was able to, using some existing federal regulations, extend eligibility to 200%. Mm-hmm. It's important for folks to understand that the more that you earn, the closer you get to that 200% of federal poverty, the smaller the SNAP benefit is. And so other things that go into the calculation are the size of the household, the number of people who purchase and prepare food together, and then things that we consider as we think about the household budget and calculating that federal percentage of poverty is, what are their living expenses, what are the utilities, and those kinds of things. And so it's certainly a complicated process. We have, big computer systems that manage all those things, and all of those are driven by the federal government in terms of eligibility. But it is a financially based eligibility means tested program. It's also important for folks to remember that there is a work requirement component for SNAP, and so when you think about it, kind of two ways. One is as folks move towards the end of eligibility, the way that you get from, perhaps 100% of federal poverty to 200% is because you're working and you're earning more. And so there is a work requirement. There are, in some cases, eligibility or exemptions for those work requirements because the person has a disability, maybe at home caring for a child, engaged in an educational or training program, and those types of things. But means-tested eligibility program that has work requirements attached to it.
What are the most common questions you're getting these days? I mean, this week, I'm sure you're getting a lot of questions.
Yeah, well, I would say, one of the things that happened as a result of the federal shutdown and its impact on SNAP benefits for November is it certainly shined a pretty big light on issues around food insecurity and really gave us at the governmental level an opportunity to kind of talk more broadly about what SNAP is and isn't. There's all kinds of misunderstandings out there about these types of social services programs. So we were, glad to kind of step into that space and educate the public about the eligibility components, the work requirements. So there was a lot of questions about what SNAP is and is not as a result of this. And then certainly on the SNAP recipient side, there were a lot of questions about, what's going to happen? When am I going to get benefits? Am I going to get 100% benefits? When do things get back to normal? And what do I need to do to feed my family? And so, because of Governor DeWine's investment of $7 million to the food banks, we were able to work with our partners at the Ohio Association of Food Banks and their regional banks to direct people to the closest resources in their community.
What do you say to critics of SNAP who wonder if there's a better way or they want it to be taken care of at the local level without the government involved? What would you say to someone who says that to you?
Yeah, well, I would say, from a Job and Family Services standpoint, where we administer a number of public assistance programs, whether it's unemployment insurance, SNAP, cash assistance, and a number of different things. You know, I think we look at it from the standpoint of, you know, what can we do to do better? Certainly there's administrative efficiencies that we can identify and those kinds of things. So I think, you know, we're always looking for opportunities to do better as a state and to deliver programs more efficiently, to reduce fraud and those types of things. But I would say, you know, overall, you know, SNAP is a very efficient program when it comes to meeting the nutrition needs of Americans who struggle economically. And, you know, it's kind of a twofer in the sense that if it helps individuals while also at the same time, you know, they can go and shop and, you know, at local groceries that then create jobs in the local community. So in terms of a public assistance program, it really is, I would say, an efficient program in the way it is delivered. Are there ways we could do it better? Sure. And we're always looking for opportunities to do that.
That was my last question. If you could change one thing about SNAP, you know, like snap your fingers and change it, what would be the change you would make?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing that I would change, I would say there's two things. One is something we need to do in Ohio, and we have talked about and need additional state funding to do, is to upgrade the cards from magstripe to chips. Mm. There is, to the extent that there is fraud in the system, it is from bad actors stealing account numbers and being able to digitally move those funds from a recipient's account, you know, to the bad guys. And so we do a lot of things on the fraud front to combat that. But moving from mag stripes to a chip technology for EBT cards is something that is a priority for us. It would reduce a ton of fraud. I would say another thing that would be great and that we have looked at doing and are working on is how do we create incentives for individuals in a health-based approach to make healthier choices. And so there are a number of states that have had incentive-based programs so that when a person makes a purchase of a fresh fruit or vegetable, those kinds of things, that they might get an additional resource on their card. In Ohio, we've partnered with a Cincinnati-based nonprofit called Produce Perks that's done some demonstration projects like that locally, and I think we've seen some success. That would be something that I think would be great for the federal government to investigate and to invest in on a wider frame.
We've been talking about SNAP in Ohio with Matthew Damschroeder, Director of Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to talk with the head of the Ohio Association of Food Banks and an attorney with Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The recent government shutdown magnified a sobering reality in our society. A growing number of Ohio adults and children are growing hungry. And it predates the shutdown, and it won't be solved by simply turning SNAP benefits back on. The issues are greater than providing the next meal. It's the cost of childcare. It's the rising price tag for health care. During the shutdown, Central Ohio food banks, community groups, and crowdfunding efforts rushed to fill the gap. A temporary fix, not exactly a sustainable solution. So where do we go from here? Joining us now is Joshua Goodwin, managing attorney at Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio.
Welcome to All Sides, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And also with us is Jory Novotny, Executive Director of the Ohio Association of Food Banks. Welcome to All Sides, Jory.
Thanks, Amy.
So I'd like both of you to give us a sense of what a 43-day federal government shutdown looked like from your vantage point. So, Jory, your organization is the Ohio Association of Food Banks. You represent 12 Feeding America food banks, 3,600 hunger relief agencies. What did a 40-plus day shutdown look like for you?
Yeah, I think your previous guest, Director Dan Schroeder, talked about uncertainty, right? So we're a network, a logistical network, a statewide charitable hunger relief network that generally is trying to forecast what kind of product we need to have on the shelves to respond to individual crisis. And when we're anticipating the possibility of a systemic, widespread, statewide crisis like the gap in SNAP benefits, as well as loss of paychecks for federal workers, we're rushing to try and make sure that we have adequate supply on the shelves in the same way that individuals, even before the shutdown extended into November, were watching and listening and getting nervous and uncertain about whether or not they'd be able to afford the food that they needed for their families. So just a lot of uncertainty. And also, frankly, I was really encouraged by the response across every sector of the community to recognize what a gap in SNAP benefits and a gap in paychecks for our federal workers would mean for their food security and to step up in every way they could.
Were you surprised at how quickly, basically, it was announced that SNAP was not happening on November 1st, and then immediately food banks saw more people? Did you know that that would happen?
I wasn't surprised. We've had shutdowns before. We've had threats of shutdowns before. Mm-hmm. Even before the shutdown extended into November, folks were already making plans, as anyone would, right? You want to think ahead to the next week and the next month about how you're going to afford all of those bills and make sure that your kids have the food they need. So we saw upticks in need before we reached November, as folks anticipated, and were paying attention to the likelihood that SNAP wouldn't be available on time. So they were already making difficult trade-offs using coping mechanisms to stretch whatever resources they had available.
Did you have enough food at that time?
You know, our emergency supplies were not as healthy and robust as we would prefer in a time when we're approaching a kind of statewide shortfall of such magnitude. But we were able to move really quickly. I think we've learned a lot over recent crises of how to respond in any kind of disaster. So we're really built for crisis, whether that's for an individual family or for the entire state. And I'm really proud of how the network responded quickly to move more food in and more food out.
And Josh, what about you? Can you give us a sense of what legal aid has been doing during this government shutdown time and how 43 days impacted you?
Yeah, I really want to echo what Jory said and what Director Dan Schroeder said. For our clients and for ourselves, it was a lot of uncertainty. Uncertainty about when things were going to open back up. And for our clients, uncertainty about who to talk to, who to listen to. There was a lot of just odd information flowing out there. And I think it's important to understand that while SNAP is a federal funded program, each state operates it in, you know, kind of different ways. And so knowing what's happening in one state might not be applicable to Ohio. And so the national media, it's just really hard to keep track of all of it. And so we were trying to understand what was happening so that we could let our clients know and let the rest of our staff know, what was happening to our clients and what they were, experiencing while they were trying to navigate all of the other problems we might be helping them with.
What does your day-to-day look like? Can you talk to me about what a majority of the cases you're seeing now?
Yeah, so a lot of the cases that we see that are SNAP-related fall into a couple of buckets. One, the process for applying for a SNAP in Ohio, I think there's this misconception some people might have that, oh, I just go, sign my name on a piece of paper and all of a sudden I get an EBT card. It's actually a lengthy process. There's a long application you have to fill out. You then have to go through a lengthy interview with somebody from Job and Family Services. You have to turn in all sorts of pieces of paper to, your county before you get your card. And it might take 30 days. And so there are a lot of places that can break down for our clients. They might not get the phone call that they're expecting. They might be trying to call in and can't get through sometimes. They, you know, might not be able to get the right piece of paper in on the first try. And so we often help our clients kind of mediate between our clients and Job and Family Services to figure out, okay, what's missing? Let us help you get that piece of paper that you need. When you're dealing with a county like Franklin County and you have, you know, more than 100,000, 160,000 people on SNAP, that's a lot of pieces of paper that the county has to try to keep track of. So that's one group of folks that we're helping is that initial application. And then, you know, folks who will fall through the cracks sometimes, who maybe their benefits have been terminated in the middle of their certification period. We'll also help them navigate, well, what's going on? Was it terminated for good reason? Or is it something that we can do to help you get back on SNAP because, you know, the county may have just made a mistake?
I can see how someone might need a lawyer, need legal aid if there's like a mistake happening, if there's fraud, if there's something like that going on. But I think that a lot of listeners would wonder, like, if you're helping them just apply, like, why do you need a lawyer for that?
So we're not helping them apply.
Okay.
You know, I send folks to the Mid-Ohio Food Collective. They do the application process. Mm-hmm. I completely agree. In an ideal world, you wouldn't need an attorney to get access to SNAP. The reality is that when mistakes happen at the county level, it can be really hard for somebody who's going through that application process to fully understand what problem actually happened. You know, we spend a lot of time on our team communicating with Job and Family Services. We kind of understand the Job and Family Services speak. And when they say this is the problem, we can translate that for our clients into the thing that they actually need. These programs are big federal programs. If you start looking at the amount of laws, the amount of regulations that everybody has to keep track of, it's no wonder that our clients and frankly, sometimes our caseworkers have troubles navigating it. And so we try to, you know, do that translation between what Job and Family Services is needing, explaining that to our clients, and then getting our clients to get the piece of paper or whatever is needed so that Job and Family Services, you know, gets the right benefit out to people, that our clients are getting what they're actually entitled to. And that also kind of plays into that payment error rate that Director Dan Schroeder was talking about. We want to make sure that that payment error rate is as low as possible by making sure our folks are getting what they're entitled to.
So Matt Damschroeder from Ohio Department of Job and Family Services says that they hope to have everything for the full payments for November all figured out by the end of this week, everyone paid. Are you expecting a lot of calls on Monday of people who need help because it didn't work?
No, I think these systems are pretty automated. Mm-hmm. I'm not anticipating a lot of phone calls coming in. We had let our folks know at the front desk that, you know, here's what's happening around SNAP. If you're getting phone calls from people saying, I just didn't get my benefits this month, helping them tease out, is it because nobody got their benefits this month or is it because there's something unique happening on your case? It's possible we'll get a few phone calls, but I think these automated systems, once the state gets rolling, I think they, you know, their systems do a decent job. So, no, I think people are going to get their benefits you know, without an issue in November.
You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking today about hunger and the recent government shutdown and how organizations around the state are addressing the growing need. With us is Joshua Goodwin from Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio and Jory Novotny with the Association, the Ohio Association of Food Banks. Sorry, lots of words there. Jory, what are you hearing from food banks that serve more rural areas, because we tend to think that the need is greater in a city. There's SNAP recipients in all 88 counties. So talk to me about some of the other areas.
Yeah, I think that SNAP is one tool that's more of an equalizer across every community because it puts purchasing dollars in the hands of every family facing food budget shortfalls so that they can spend it at local grocers and retailers. So as you said, it's impacting Ohioans across all 88 counties. Certainly in gaps with federal and state resources of any kind, rural communities tend to be hit harder in many ways. Some of that's because they have more you know, sparsely available infrastructure at the community level, simply because of how the population density looks compared to an urban or suburban area. Also because there tends to be less community wealth and philanthropic resources there to surge in a response. And look, we would prefer that philanthropy not be used to fill giant shortfalls in federally funded benefits. Philanthropy has a real unique power to invest in scalable, sustainable, new ways of doing things bigger and better for communities. But it's not intended to fill everyone's food budget shortfalls. So what we saw is certainly, you know, a difference and a little bit of a fragmentation in the ability for rural community-based providers who are just fantastic to be able to access that additional food quickly and get it out as quickly. So I think that there's definitely existing disparities across rural and urban communities in a variety of different ways. And this was something that definitely underscored that difference.
Earlier, we mentioned that the state issued $7 million to help with some food assistance during that weird week when SNAP went away before the government shutdown ended. $7 million is a lot of money. But it doesn't seem like a lot of money when you're talking about the whole state, I'm thinking. What happened with the $7 million?
Sure. So, I mean, SNAP provides about $260 million in fully federally funded benefits every month. So the gaps in food purchasing power daily were quickly, you know, eclipsed compared to $7 million. However, I want to make sure to underscore how grateful we were for that response. That Governor DeWine, Director Damschroeder, and our partners in the Ohio General Assembly stepped up to provide some of those gap resources. So what that looked like, that went straight directly to food purchases, whole truckloads of fruits, vegetables, protein. We needed to get more protein on shelves. A lot of highly perishable foods, as well as important canned products that are shelf-stable stalwarts of food pantries who were rushing to expand access to services to fill those gaps. And it was available and spread out across all 88 counties through, you know, existing multi-county food banks that supply food to local food pantries and soup kitchens. So communities in every area got a share of that $7 million based on the number of people receiving SNAP in their county.
And Josh, Director Damschroeder mentioned that coming in 2027, there's going to be changes to SNAP at the federal level. How that impacts everyone remains to be seen. But how is legal aid going to prepare? How do you help educate and inform people when changes are happening to programs like this?
Yeah, I think a lot of our job is to translate what is happening to these programs from at the federal and the state level into a way that our clients can understand them so that they understand what they're able to get, what's misinformation out there, and do it, like I said, in plain language, in a way that they can get it. So we're working on already figuring out, you know, some of these changes in how to translate that for our clients. So, for example, the work requirement changes that are coming, they're expanding who is going to be required to participate in work programs to include more people who are currently homeless. Right now, don't have a work requirement, but they're going to in the future. And so working with our, you know, homeless shelters, folks who help folks experiencing homelessness, helping them understand what's happening so they can let their clients know. And then when we have clients coming in, educating them on, you know, you're eligible now, but I want to talk to you about the future so that you can start planning for making sure that you have a plan for either how to meet that work requirement, or, you know, are there other exemptions that may apply if you're just not able to work? And so it's educating our community partners just as much as it is our clients. So we'll see like 400, 500 people on our team with these benefits issues in a given year. That's just a drop of the bucket when you look at how many people in Central Ohio actually need help. And so we've got to talk to as many people in the community as we can about these changes and help them understand what to expect.
You also help with what's called Ohio Works First cash assistance. Is that the same thing as the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. So that's Ohio's version of TANF. Mm-hmm. We just call it Ohio Works First here.
I see. Okay.
So it's the old welfare program that people may be
familiar. We change names.
With.
Okay.
Yep. We love our acronyms in this okay. world.
So do you help people with that too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We help folks understand, again, the 36-month time limit. When it's another program where there is a lot of hoops that folks have to jump through in order to access it. And there are a lot of ways it can go wrong. And so helping our clients when there are problems, stay on that program, helping them when, you know, they've used up their 36 months, but they fall into another, you know, situation or hardships that's beyond their control, helping them get back on the program can be a challenge. And so, yeah, we advocate with Job and Family Services or go to state hearings as needed in order to help people stay on that program.
Jory, I asked Matt Damschroeder this too. Is there a better way to structure food assistance systems? I mean, I asked him if he could snap his fingers and change something about SNAP, what he would do. And, you know, he gave two examples. But what do you think about our food assistance system? What could be better?
Well, I want to echo Director Damschroeder's support for modernizing the EBT cards themselves. That's a really critical tool. We have a lot of folks that have been victimized for several years now by organized crime who are having their benefits stolen because those cards aren't chipped, they're magnetic strip. So great, simple, straightforward solution that I know we have a lot of support for with the General Assembly as well that I look forward to seeing come true. But I mean, more significantly than that, I think this situation underscored the vital nature of investing in access to food assistance and the ability to purchase food in local communities at local grocery stores for families with kids, seniors, disabled Ohioans, hard workers who look to SNAP benefits as a way to meet their overall economic needs. And I think it's really critical we think about SNAP as a tool for not only food security, but economic security. It keeps people thinking about how to be more focused at school, how to be more productive at work, how to live and age with dignity in place, you know, join the later generations in our state. And we don't need to think about it just as a tool for food assistance, but really as a way to invest in the well-being of our communities and our families. There's about 10,000 retailers that accept SNAP benefits. That's part of how they make revenue and how they create and maintain jobs in their local communities too, which I think it just underscores the importance of our food supply chain and its resilience.
Okay. Josh, we're out of time, but I want you to be able to answer just quick in 30 seconds. If you could change one thing about SNAP to make it better, what would you do?
I agree that the chipping of those cards is unbelievably important. I get so frustrated when clients come to me and they say, well, all my money is gone. It was apparently stolen by people in New York or California or some other state that I've never been to. And it happened 3 hours after it was loaded. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do this month? And my response is, I go visit a food bank, because unfortunately you can't get that reimbursed. And this is a problem. You know, our credit cards have been chipped since what, 2015? And yet this continues to be a problem for our clients. It's a real, real frustrating situation.
Thank you to Joshua Goodwin, Managing Attorney at Legal Aid of Southeast and Central Ohio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also thanks to Jory Novotny, Executive Director of Ohio's Association of Food Banks. Thanks for joining us today, Jory.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk about ways you can help with the executive director of a nonprofit called BESA. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We've been talking this hour about hunger, SNAP benefits, and changes coming to public assistance programs. The need is great, and it's growing. Those who can are often moved to do something. But what? Joining us now is Matthew Goldstein, CEO of BESA, a Columbus-based nonprofit whose motto is, be the good. Welcome to All Sides, Matthew.
Thanks for having me.
So BESA works with more than 100 nonprofits community-wide, and I think a lot of people, when they hear about others in their community going hungry, especially children, they want to do something tangible, they want to help, there's a genuine desire to help, but people don't know where to start. So how do you channel those feelings that people have into action?
You got it. A great example is the government shutdown. It lasted 44, 45 days. In that time, our website did an emergency response page, and we had over 300 service projects, over 2,000 volunteers show up and do good work to meet this moment.
Mm. So I saw that there were opportunities to stock pantry shelves, to buy wish list items off of Amazon. Tell me more about what people were signing up to do.
A lot of what we do is around basic needs, and it's the food pantries. I was at a food pantry during the government shutdown. When I pulled up, there was a line of cars around the building. I haven't seen it like that since the pandemic. Mm. Inside, what was different this time compared to when the pandemic happened was the shelves were pretty bare. During the pandemic, the government was flooding funds into food pantries, getting the food on the shelves. And so what was magical about that experience, you're talking about a food pantry, is that there were 8 volunteers packing boxes, packing bags, getting the food out to the cars, to the families that were waiting. That's the kind of work that's happening that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Your website says that you envision a world in which every community member is informed, engaged, and active. But what does that look like in reality, especially in a moment of need, specifically the need of hunger? What does it mean to get every community member informed, engaged, and active?
For me, it's about proximity. Mm-hmm. So you have to be living under a rock if you didn't know about the government shutdown and the impact on hunger and SNAP benefits. But how many of us are actually going to the food pantries and serving and volunteering? There's such a need for that, such an opportunity. And I think when we are in proximity to it, it just invigorates an energy inside of us that allows us to be activated, to be engaged, to advocate for change.
Tell me about the idea of donating money versus donating time or donating food. How do those rank?
Donating money to the food banks,
sure.
Food, incredibly important, right? Mm-hmm. They can stretch a dollar much further than we can as citizens. I would say volunteering is a pathway to donating money. Every statistic shows that when you volunteer, the next step that you typically take is to make an investment in that nonprofit.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about ways to help with Matthew Goldstein, CEO of BESA. So tell me how you find out about needs in the community. I mean, obviously, the government shutdown and the need for food was national news,
yeah,
right? But there's other needs. How do you find out about needs out there?
We have a dedicated team of about 20 people who are civic engagement experts, and we're building relationships. This year, we'll work with 185 nonprofits, from very large ones like the Food Collective to very small food pantries. And so we are building those relationships, understanding where the need is, and then figuring out how to plug in and support through volunteers.
So it was a volunteer shift. You worked at a suicide prevention hotline that led you on this path to create BESA. So let's back up a little bit and tell people about the creation of BESA and what you hope it does.
Yeah, I used to be in the corporate world, and I was doing market research there. I love market research and understanding what drives people to make decisions. And quite honestly, what I didn't fall in love with was the widget we were selling, which is jeans and flip-flops at this corporate retailer. And I found my passion in a small, cramped room. It was a suicide hotline room where we would answer calls. And it was the first introduction I had to the nonprofit sector. Mm. If I'm being honest, I didn't even know there was a nonprofit sector. I knew nothing about nonprofits. And I just fell in love with the people who ran that nonprofit, my fellow volunteers and the work itself. And I realized there are so many people who want to be engaged in this community. They're just not sure how to do it. And that's BESA.
What does BESA mean? It's BESA for our
listeners. Yeah. It's actually an Albanian word, and it translates to making a promise, keeping a promise to do right in the world. And we just fell in love with that meaning, the importance it plays in Albanian culture. And so we brought it here.
The Columbus City Council awarded BESA $100,000 earlier this year to help facilitate about 1,700 projects. So what's your plan for delivering on that? I mean, that's a lot of money.
So what's amazing is before the pandemic, BESA was doing maybe 500, 600 projects a year. Last year, we did 2,300 projects. This year, it's a little less because of the federal government, you know, the headwinds that we're facing right now. But we will deliver actually close to 2,000 service projects this year to 185 nonprofits. The need is real, but the number of people who want to show up and meet that need is also incredibly real.
Do you want to give me some examples of upcoming projects? I mean, I know people can visit your website and learn more, but give me some examples.
So one of the biggest programs we have going on right now is called WISH, and it's a drive for fixed income seniors. It started 12 years ago with 26 seniors asking for basic things like a blanket or food for their cat or dog. This year, it was 2,000 seniors on the wish list. We work with 8 different area nonprofits. The list went live 2 weeks ago on Monday. The list was sold out by Wednesday. That means thousands of community members in 2 days rallied to make sure that seniors were getting wish lists. So that program is in full swing, but there are other opportunities with food pantries on our website, Thanksgiving delivery, working at, for example, volunteering at the Van Buren Homeless Shelter in Franklinton on Thanksgiving, on Christmas Eve. There's just so many opportunities to be involved and to support our community.
You got money from Columbus City Council. Is BESA focused in on the city of Columbus, or are you doing regional stuff?
A lot of what we do is in Central Ohio. So most of what we do is in the 270 belt. Some of it is outside of it. We've always looked to expand that. We were preparing to do it this year, but again, some of those federal headwinds made us realize right now we need to focus on our core work here.
One thing that struck me was seeing the social media posts of people reaching out to help their neighbors, creating GoFundMes.
Yeah.
Tell me about how social media is helping you do your work.
I was at the Van Buren shelter a little bit ago, and there was three young women there. And I asked them, and they were there to volunteer through BESA. And I said, well, how did you guys get here? And they pointed to their one friend. They said she volunteered last month, posted about it. We said, we want to do it. She said, join me. One person became three people. That's the power of social media.
Talk to me about these GoFundMe accounts, too. Do you encourage people whenever there needs to be a fundraiser? Do you have a particular way BESA likes to raise funds?
So we don't necessarily do GoFundMe. You know, we have our, for example, our end of year campaign going on right now to help us fund the programming that we do throughout the year. And so people come to our website and donate, you know, directly to BESA. The GoFundMe campaigns, we typically, you know, I think that's more individuals going and starting those up.
Yeah, that would be like someone just wanting to do something for someone in particular. So they 100%. Create a GoFundMe and, you know, tell their story and that kind
Absolutely.
Of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How long has BESA been around?
13 years.
13 years.
Yes.
Okay. So you did survive the pandemic.
Yes.
Talk to me about that time versus this time, because you mentioned that it's different this time because in 2020, 2021, the federal government was like throwing a lot of money around. But this time the federal government was shut down. So what did that feel like from your perspective of setting up people to volunteer in places, knowing that the federal government was shut down and not knowing when it would reopen?
Yeah, it's a great question. When the pandemic hit, nonprofits could ring the emergency bell. And the federal government and local government were able to show up and funnel the funds into our programs so that we could meet the moment. This time that you can ring the emergency bell, no one is coming, right? The federal government isn't investing in local communities, and that makes it harder for local governments to also meet the moment because no local community, government, foundation, business can meet the amount of resources the federal government has invested in nonprofits. And so it's really up to the local community to meet this moment. It's really up to us as nonprofits, as individuals who care about this community, corporate citizens, local government, to figure out how to rethink systems and processes to get resources to the people who need it most.
Were you surprised? I mean, we talked about how it was announced that the federal government shutdown was continuing, SNAP was not going to happen in November, yeah. And then instantly lines were longer at food pantries. Did that surprise you?
It's not that it surprised me. I think it was overwhelming to actually see it. Again, I haven't seen it like that since the pandemic. And so it brought me back to those feelings about, you know, around the pandemic. But again, what also inspired me was at that food pantry I was describing earlier, the sense of humanity that was happening in those walls, how people were working together to show up, to support, to serve, to show, express gratitude.
We've been talking about ways to help those who are hungry. I want to thank you for your time. We've been talking with Matthew Goldstein, CEO of BESA, a Columbus-based nonprofit whose motto is Be the Good. Thank you for your time today, Matthew.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen back at WOSU.org/allsides. Subscribe to our podcast, and every episode is in our mobile app. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook, and you can follow the show on Instagram. Our handle is @AllSidesWOSU. Thank you to our staff, producers Marcus Charleston, Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz, student producers Iza Huck and Colin Simpson and Kiara Burson, video production by The Ohio Channel, board operation by Chris Johnston and Cameron Howard. This is 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jarovich.